Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's edition of The Hula Hoax. There were no gas chambers. There was no pure Jew fat soap. There were no Jew skin lampshades. And there were no Mengelian experiments. What there were concentration camps, because Hitler had decided that the Jewish Bolsheviks, who were in the process in Russia of crucifying, torturing, and killing 65 million white Christian Russians, needed to be put in cages.
So let's get this story straight about Spew Boy and Jew Watch. Apparently, Spew Boy put up his website in 1999, just thinking he'd like to put information on the internet because the Jews were preventing him from talking on the radio. Is that right? And as the years went by and he got more proficient on the internet, he put more and more information up there, taking it from only Jewish sources or as much as possible, because he knew he'd be called anti-Semitic if he put anything up against the Jews that anyone said that wasn't a Jew. So that was the theory upon which he built up his website, and without him even knowing it, it became so popular that when anyone went to Google and typed in the word Jew, Jew Watch popped up as the number one website out of 1,700,000 and some thousand websites. And then the Jews wrote to Google and said they had to change their software because they just couldn't allow it to be that more people were interested in negative information than positive information after all the work they'd done controlling our media. They had to control the internet. So they said to Google, Google, do something about this. And Google said, well, we can't because it's just pure science. Whoever gets the most hits gets the better placement in the queue. And if there's 1,750,000 websites with the word Jew in it, and one website has been hit more times than any of the other websites, that's the website that shows up in the number one position. And so then the Jews put up their website called removejewwatch.com and obtained a whole bunch of signatures, you know, with the click of a mouse. It's pretty easy to get a signature. It's not like getting a signature on a referendum or anything where you have to check and make sure the person really exists and that their name and address is bona fide. You just sit there and click clicks, you know, and you get your 50,000 signatures. And then they sent it to Google, and so Google brought down Jew Watch so that now when you type in Jew, you cannot find Jew Watch. It's not just been bumped from the number one position, it no longer exists at all. You can locate it by playing with the system, by typing in Jewish lies or things like that. But if you type the word J-E-W in the Google search engine, you cannot find Jew Watch anymore. So Google has compromised their software to make the Jews happy. Doesn't that seem like an enormous perversion of what we consider fair play? There's only one other type of website that Google will do that for, and that's a site that puts up kiddie porn. I mean, this was a legitimate historical site that got into first place without the website promoter even promoting it with advertising or anything. It just plain became popular. And the Jews couldn't allow it to happen, so they put influence on Google to do something with their software so that now if you go to the Google engine, you don't get a legitimate result anymore. We can no longer trust Google. And think of this, Google is going public this week. How are they going to tell their potential stock buyers, stockholders, that they're buying stock in a country that no longer uses legitimate software for its research engine? I think it's a pretty serious compromise of Google system myself. But anyway, you can hear the story in Frank Weltner's own voice. Here's Frank Weltner.
I have been the subject of national and international news for several weeks because of my website, which is entitled Jewwatch, and is found at www.jewwatch.com. I've mentioned it now and then, but I haven't really mentioned it as much as I could have mentioned it, at least not as much as it's been mentioned worldwide, because stories on this website have appeared in the New York Times, the New York Post, Reuters USA, Reuters UK, Reuters International, UPI, Associated Press. I've seen my name and my website mentioned as far away as the Singapore Straits, in India, in Australia, in New Zealand. Everywhere you look on the internet, they're talking about Google and Jewwatch. The situation occurred when a Jewish gentleman by the name of Stephen Weinstock, who was a real estate developer, decided that there was something wrong about Jewwatch coming up when people would type Jew on the internet. And so Mr. Weinstock decided he was going to do something about it. And he did. He began to call around and to get people interested in defeating the Google client, which caused this to come up. By the Google client, I mean the software on Google, which caused Jewwatch to come forward first. He and others got in touch with Google to find out what was going on, and they found out that Google, like everything else in America, I might add, was pretty much owned by the Jews. And there was, I believe, a David Crane there who apologized, and he said that he had no idea that this was going on, and that they would do what they could, but they were not going to change the Google software for one site. That the only time they'd ever done this in terms of knocking a site off was if it were illegal. And I believe they had knocked some kind of site off for kiddie porn. Interesting thing was, I mean, here I am sitting here minding my own business, right? Well, I have this radio show and some other radio shows, but I'm just minding my own business. And suddenly I become an object of conversation worldwide in newspapers owned mostly by Jewish companies like the New York Times and Reuters and, UPI, AP, the whole bit, the whole nine yards. The Washington Times. I mean, I was everywhere. I thought, oh, I'm having more than 15 minutes of fame here because, gee, there's a 24-hour clock around the world and I'm being covered in every corner of the world. And the thing that was really being covered was the fact that my site was on Google, and when you type Jew in, Jewwatch came up number one. And the slur was that this was a terrible, evil, anti-Semitic website. Now, no one ever called me. Of course, I tried to keep my phone number secret, although a Jew found out and published it on the internet. And I have had several newspaper people call me. But for the most part, I really haven't been able to have my say. I did get onto a talk radio show in New York, which was called Morning Sedition. And there was a Jewish gentleman there named Mark Moran who interviewed me. There was a Negro gentleman there, and there was a woman. I don't know if she was Jewish or Christian or what she was. But the black guy, he got a real kick out of it because I gave Mark Moran a run for his money. He figured I was going to be a pushover. That I guess he thought I was one of these stupid, clumsy KKK people, and that he would be able to interview me and that I would look like a ridiculous fool. And of course he had buttered the whole thing up before I got on there. He had been using his time for 2 or 3 days, as he said on the air, to demean Jewwatch as a terrible, hateful site. And evidently someone had gone up there and taken a look at some things. And he started off kind of trivially by saying that it couldn't be true what was on the site because his name did not appear under Jewish entertainers, and I got a big laugh out of that. I thought that was pretty funny, actually. I said, well, when I worked on it in 1997, in terms of stars, I said, you were just a fledgling. Now, I would have put you in there if you were a star, and when I do it the next time, Mark, I'm going to put you in there because you deserve, buddy, to be a star. He said, well, good, Frank, I appreciate that. And It was pretty good natured, and when he got really pushy and sort of semi hateful, I do what I usually do, and I just laugh because it makes me kind of laugh when people get, you know, kind of pissed off. There's just something funny about it. I don't know what it is, but it just, it means, well, at least they care. But I don't, so I start laughing because I don't care whether if they validate me or not. And I really don't care what a Jew thinks. As you know that, and I don't care what a Negro thinks or a Polynesian or anybody but a white person. And there's a hell of a lot of white people that I don't care what they think either. Because I am a self-defined individual, and I only care what I think. And that's all you can do in life, is try to care what you think and not what others think. Well, at any rate, this has gone on now for 3 or 4 weeks. I'm not sure exactly when it started, but it was quite a while ago. Many, many miles of newsprint ago, I probably destroyed 300 or 400 acres of forest. My story was an ecological disaster. I mean, they kept printing this puke about me versus Google. They all got into it. They thought it was really interesting. Because it is a story about freedom of speech. That's exactly what it is. It's a freedom of speech story. Now, let me tell you about Jew Watch. When I first wrote Jew Watch, it was back around 1995, 96, 97. I don't really remember. But when I domained it was 1997. And I had tried at first to put it on small websites, like I put it on GeoCities. And pretty soon some Jew saw it and went up there and talked to the ISP and said, this jerk has something anti-Semitic on your website. Now, like I say, there isn't anything anti-Semitic. I never use sheeny, kike, or any other word on it. It's a scholarly area. I go up there and take a look at it. It has all these news articles. There are clippings from books, from magazines, and from rabbis. I tried to quote Jewish people first because I knew the site would be called anti-Semitic. So I figured, well, the best way to try to counter that is to try to quote Jews first, talking about some of the really dastardly things that Jews did, like starting communism and starting the Soviet Union. And beating up on the Palestinians in Israel, and Jews talking about the Jewish spies in New York, like the Rosenbergs and so forth. I always tried to quote a Jew, and if I couldn't quote a Jew, then I would go to a Jewish newspaper, and on, right down the line. Finally, I'd hit some goyim, you know, some non-Jew, because I knew that there was going to be a propaganda war about the site, and they would call me an anti-Semite. I will tell you the truth. I don't care what a Jew does. But let's get back to this Jew Watch thing. And the way this went, I wrote Jew Watch when the Jews were attacking my radio show in St. Louis, which was WGNU AM radio, which I had been on for several years, and I was talking about the Holocaust. You see, I don't really believe the Holocaust occurred the way the Jews think it occurred. And they didn't like this at all. I said that I didn't think that the 6 million had died that way, that there wasn't a bit of evidence that there was Zyklon B used in any of these so-called gas chambers, and that when they had been tested by 3 nations, United States, Poland, and Russia, they couldn't find anything but a trace, just a tiny background trace of this gas, which would be consistent with somebody spraying for roaches in the football field outside of the so-called gas chamber, which was a shower. But this one little room where they were delousing clothing, try to save Jews' lives, that went off the screen. There was so much Zyklon B in there that went off the screen. So the only place where they had gassing was tiny clothing rooms where they would delouse clothes so that the people wouldn't die of typhon. At any rate, I started Jew Watch because I needed to do something to punish the ADL for criticizing how I talked about Jews on American radio and WGNU. And they had evidently behind my back written a letter to the station owner saying that, well, Mr. Weltner has, he has criticized, he's denied the Holocaust, he's talked about Stuart Eisenstadt, who is trying to get money out of Switzerland, and he works for the State Department. And they had a little bevy of things that I had talked about there that they didn't like. And the owner had written them back, they said, you had agreed with us that if he continued to do this, that you would talk to him, and if he continued to do this, you would get him off the air. And so I was called in, and they said, what about this? And I said, well, everything I talked about was true. What I said about the Holocaust, what I said about Stuart Eisenstadt, all this stuff is true. And I have proof of it. So I figured, well, I'm going to lose this little job. Didn't pay that much, but I'm afraid I was going to lose it. So I went through my computer and I took all my stuff on Jews and I put about 20 pages of it into a report about everything that they said. They said the Holocaust, you know, I mentioned everything, how it had gone from 4.5 million people killed at Auschwitz down to 1.1, but the Russian archives, which were there all along, that had the German records, showed 80,000, and also that the Red Cross had been at Auschwitz and all these other labor camps, and they never saw any gassing going on, and they were able to, they even lived there. You know, some of them lived there. I mean, they watched what was going on, and they had these overhead photos of different prisoners who were basically workers who were playing football, which is soccer, out there by the gas chamber. Well, if they'd been out there, the gas would have killed them. I mean, you know, it wouldn't have been very good. They would have gotten very, very ill, at least. And there was never any smoke coming out of those so-called ovens that you've ever seen a picture of. That just didn't happen. And I had all that in there, and I said, well, no, they have no right to talk about me criticizing Stuart Eisenstadt, because he's my employee. I mean, the man is a dual citizen of Israel and the United States, and he's in the employee of the State Department, and he's doing the work for Israel by telling Switzerland, you're going to pay these rats $1 billion, or we're going to close your banks here in the United States, or whatever he was telling them that he was going to do, which wasn't very nice. And whatever they said, I answered each thing there, and I had all these references. And I started thinking about it, and I stayed on the air because I was able to prove everything. And the station owner was a really remarkable individual. And he believes in freedom of speech. In fact, the station is called Radio Free St. Louis. And at any rate, I got kind of thinking about it, and before I was going to be kicked off the air, I thought, they're going to pay, these Jews are going to pay for what they did to me. You Jews are going to pay for what you did to me. And I determined that's what's going to happen. They were going to pay for what they did to me. So what I did was this. I began to take all of my materials and to catalog them. What I envisioned was a kind of a clipping box on the internet that was logically put together so that if you went to the communism section, you would see all the Jewish communists, and you would see who started the Soviet Union, who started Hungary, and you could just flip around through it by going up and down from general to specific using this wonderful hyperlink system that you have on the internet where you point to a word and it's underlined, you click to it and it goes to a page about that word or about that concept, which opens up other pages of concepts. So you can just kind of browse and chew on it like it's a big verbal knowledge smorgasbord. So I began to put these things into folders. So the communism went into one folder, and that folder split up inside that folder to other things like the USSR, the famine that was caused in the Ukraine, and genocides and so forth. And then I had one for the Jewish spies. I had a folder for media. I got some of that from Stormfront. No, I don't think I got it from Stormfront. I think I got that from William Pierce from natvan.com. Yes, in fact, I'm sure I got it from... At any rate, I put Jewwatch together. I spent just, hundreds of hours, 10, 20 hours a day, working and working on that site, plus doing my other job. And finally, I got it together, and it was like, holy cow, this works like Yahoo used to, you know? And it's real easy, and you can just sail up and down the spectrum. You go right at the top, you can go right back to Jewwatch, and then you see all these general things opening up, and you go to those. Oh, it's fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous. So I put it up there on Tripod first, which was a free area. And it wasn't domained as Jewwatch. It was like, you know, you go to www.tripod.com/jewwatch/index.html, and there you are. Well, that would go along for a while, and then some little freaky Jew would call up Tripod and say, Oy vey, there's an anti-Semitic website there. The next time I'd go, it would say, no website here. So I'd fill out a thing at GeoCities, and I'd go there. After a few weeks, Oy vey, there's an anti-Semitic website. You must take that down. down it went. Absolutely. So then, you know, I put it on Angel Fire. Down it went. Oy vey, there's an anti-Semitic website. And I dare anybody to show me anywhere on that website that there's anything anti-Semitic. Are there anti-Semitic texts? Well, yes, there's texts that are anti-Semitic. You've got Mein Kampf. You've got Henry Ford's The International Jew. You've got the Protocols of Zion. Because anybody that wants to study the Jews and any question about the Jews, you have to understand those documents, and it's a scholarly area. You know, Harvard Library has, I think, 7 or 8 copies of Mein Kampf. Do you think Harvard Library is anti-Semitic because it has that? They have the International Jew, I'm almost sure. Does that make them anti-Semitic? Well, if it doesn't make them anti-Semitic, then why does it make Jew Watch anti-Semitic? Can you answer me that? It doesn't make Jew Watch anti-Semitic at all. It means that I have simply been interested in Russian history and New York history and Jewish history, and I found things in it that weren't quite right. And so I decided I was going to put the information together so that, guess what, people would know what the truth is. And everything in Jew Watch is the truth. If you can find something that's not the truth, I'll change it. Because I don't want any lies up there, because any lie up there would detract from the truthfulness of everything else. That's the way I feel about it. I'm a scholar. Anyway, the website got up there. Finally, I decided, screw this, and I domained it. www.jewwatch.com. And I put it up, I believe, on an ISP. And before long, my ISP had kicked me off. Even though I was paying, you know, to put it up there. Oy vey, anti-Semitic site. So I thought, well, what the hell am I going to do? I want to get this information out. People can't be deluded about how nice the Jews are forever when the history is such that they're a bunch of killing little freaks. And they're one of the nastiest, dirtiest, most genocidal group against white people in the universe. So, and I had the goods on them there because it was all from their newspapers and from their rabbis and from their reporters and from their magazines and books and their encyclopedias. Because that's all I put in there was the truthful stuff from their stuff. There were a few things that weren't from theirs, but, I mean, obviously they didn't write Mein Kampf. They didn't write The International Jew by Henry Ford, so I can't say that was Jewish. So obviously there were some non-Jewish things in there, but when it came to the news and all that, I tried to make it Jewish stuff so that they couldn't say I was anti-Semitic. I finally put something on the internet saying, would somebody like to mirror Jew Watch? The Jews keep kicking it off. And Don Black at Stormfront said, I'll take it. And another person, I think it was Wise as Serpents, as I recall, but I might be wrong there. I think it was, somebody else took it too. So there were several mirrored sites. And it stayed up because Black didn't kick it off. But this last week he had to because his ISP said, hey, there's been so much crap going on with GWatch, you're out of here. And he kicked him off. And at least that's what it says up there on removegewwatch.com. So at any rate, it stayed up there, and it stayed up there, and it stayed up there, and it, you know, I improved it here and there. And it stayed very current, pretty much, and then I left it alone. Then I would, when I was arguing with people about Jews on the internet, I would go up to Jew Watch, I'd look for the communists, and then I would paste this stuff in the chat rooms, and a lot of other people do that. They go to Jew Watch, and they paste this stuff. And I didn't know that Jew Watch was number one on Google when you typed in the word Jew. But it was. It was. It was number one when you typed it into Jew. I mean, we typed Jew into Google. And it was that way for 3 years. And this Jew, Steven Weinstock, a New York real estate investor, he didn't like it. He decided he was going to do something about it. So this little Jew got this thing going on it. And here I am, the object of discussion all over the world in newspapers. And here's Google, the object of discussion. Is it right for Google to have Jew Watch at the top when people write Jew in it? Oy vey, is that right that people should be able to find an anti-Semitic website? Which, of course, is a lie. You see, Jew Watch is not an anti-Semitic website. It's just that Jew Watch tells the truth, and the truth doesn't make the Jews look very good. I mean, would it look very good if your grandfather was the butcher of the Ukraine and killed 20 million Christians? Well, their grandfather's the butcher of the Ukraine, Lazarus Kaganovich. Would it look good if your granduncle was the killer of Petrograd. Who killed a quarter of Petrograd? The butcher of Petrograd? No, it wouldn't. You'd be kind of ashamed of him. Well, Gingrich Yagoda was their granduncle. He was their relative, and he killed one quarter of Petrograd. And, of course, the big one. No, the biggie, Trotsky. You know, he was a Jew. He killed tens of millions of people with the Red Army that he was in charge of. And he started the KGB, and, oh boy, they'd get into that castle there and torture everybody. Well, they'd even take priests and crucify them, according to the books that have been written about it. These were evil Jews. They were terrible. They were anti-Christ. They were anti-Christian. And they always act like they're victims, and that we are, always putting them down. No. We were the victims. We were the ones that got tortured. We were the ones that got killed. We were the ones that were starved to death. We were the ones kicked and beaten and robbed and screwed out of our land and taken to gulags and taken in boxcars up to Siberia to starve to death and to freeze to death. These Jews did this to us in the Soviet Union. And then they said, oy vey, oy vey, they killed some Jews in the pogroms. Yeah, right, Uncle Chewy. You liar. It's all up on Jew Watch. See, they're scared. They're scared. It's up on Jew Watch. Everything they did is up on Jew Watch. Actually, they did a lot more, but, there's enough of... I tried to limit it because I wanted people to be able to see it all so they could just get there and refresh themselves on what the Jews did so that they wouldn't get lost in a whole lot of detail, but the important stuff, like the murders of these millions and millions, 65 million people, that's what that hits them. If I had any more stuff than I have up there, which is a ton of stuff, there must be 850 pages of stuff up there. If there was more than that, the good stuff would get lost in trivialities. So I wanted to give them the backbone of it, and that's what I gave them. And that way you can go up there and you can really find the stuff easily. Well, they don't like that, and Mr. Weinstock didn't like it. He didn't want anybody to know that his relatives, who were Jewish, were a bunch of murdering, genocidal fiends who decided that they would just have their way with these Christians and kill them off. Anyway, Jew Watch was up there for years. And I would just type on the URL line, JewWatch.com, and I'd go up there and I'd get the information I wanted. So I didn't even know it was number one at Google until I started seeing my name all over the world. You know, like I say, the Singapore Straits, whoever the hell heard of the Singapore Straits Times? I mean, it's about everywhere I look. The Pakistani News? Two newspapers in Jerusalem. I mean, there was a Jerusalem Post and Haaretz. There were all sorts of Jewish newspapers and JTA stuff. Reuters. All these news services. New York Times News Service, AP, UPI. Hey, Frank Welner, Jew Watch, Jew Watch, anti-Semitic site on Google. Yeah, that's a big lie. It's a historical site. It's a very honorable, scholarly site. At any rate, the number of hits went up and up and up and up and up, and finally it collapsed. And I don't know if it was from hits or if it was because it was botted, because I know that it was kicked off of this ISP, this Internet Service Provider, and for terms of service, but they didn't say why. Stormfront was kicked off too, and so they disconnected me from Stormfront to get on somewhere else because they didn't want to have the Jews do anything, and I wasn't paying Stormfront anyway. So off it went. And there I was, getting ready to go to the National Alliance meeting to give a speech up in Hillsboro, West Virginia. And 50 minutes before I go, I get a call from another country saying, Jew Watch is down. I couldn't get it back up, so I went on to the meeting. Come back Monday, and by Tuesday or Wednesday, it came back up again. And then, because I changed ISPs. It was down today, though. I was getting ready to do some stuff, and I go up there, and Jew Watch was down, and guess what? I couldn't find it on Google. They took it off. Now, can you imagine? They talked about, well, we're not going to do anything. We're too good of a service to take something off that's not illegal. And they have a right to be there. And that Jew site up there, that removejewwatch.com, they said, we won. They had like 115,000 signatures. And Google collapsed, and they took Jew Watch off. At any rate, I got together with my webmaster and this and that, and suddenly he got it back up again. He went up to the company that took it off this time, just today, and he shamed them into putting it back up again. We'll see how long it lasts.
Oh, I'm a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. And for this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I hate the Yankee nation and everything they do. I hate the Declaration of Independence, too. I hate the glorious Union tis dripping with our blood. I hate the striped banner, I fit it all I could. I rode with Robert E. Lee for 3 years thereabout. Got wounded in four places and I starved at Point Lookout. I caught the rheumatism a-camping in the snow. But I killed a chance of Yankees and I'd like to kill some more. 300,000 Yankees is stiff in southern dust. We got 300,000 before they conquered us. They died of southern fever and southern steel and shot. I wish they were 3 million instead of what we got. I can't take up my musket and fight 'em now no more. But I ain't gonna love 'em, now that is certain sure. And I don't want no pardon for what I was and am. I won't be reconstructed and I do not give a damn. Oh, I'm a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. For this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done.
One to go to while they get it back up and change servers and so forth.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the digital millennium. Did you know that 2000 was designated by Congress as the digital millennium, and that we are about to start 1,000 years as the digital millennium? That's what I surmise by looking at the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1998. This law was passed by Congress 1 year after Frank Weltner put up his website, JewWatch. And I kind of think that this law relates to Frank Weltner's website, but I can't quite decide. This Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1998 is basically an addendum to an already existing federal copyright act known as Title 17 of the U.S. Code. And we can rest assured that the purpose of this addendum, this Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1998, is to protect the interests of artists and writers for the next 1,000 years, including, I dare say, Frank Weltner. I can't understand this act because I'm new to most of the concepts, but I'm running into an awful lot of nice phrases that I've never heard before that seem to discuss our situation here in relationship to our rights as white people to put sites on the internet that we think tell the truth. As authors of websites, we are creating literary material, which is protected under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1998, because we are in the digital millennium, and we will be in the digital millennium for the next 1,000 years. So here we are, you and me, creating digital art in the form of writing and cartooning and creating, which is protected under this act. And according to this act, it's ours and ours alone. And no one may access it unless they do it right. in the case of Google, they have to relay the information without modification to the content of the material as sent or received. I'm going to repeat that because some of these phrases need to be memorized and understood since they're new to our new millennium. Okay? Your website can be transmitted around the internet as long as it is done so without modification to the content of the material as sent or received. Now, my question is, if your material falls into a scientifically organized mechanical search engine with a scientifically arrived at position in the queue of the 2 billion websites on this internet, doesn't altering your position in the queue somehow alter or modify the content of the material which is queuing up? I think it does. I think your placement in the queue is one of the essential pieces of information that are included in the content of the material you have created, and that to deny you your proper place in the queue is to somehow infringe on your copywritten material, although I haven't figured out how. According to this act, Google would be liable under a copyright infringement unless it adheres to certain standards laid out by Congress, one of which is that it must accommodate and not interfere with standard technical measures. Now, I don't know what that means, and I may be completely off base, and I'm not being facetious. It won't be the first time a lawyer has picked up a law and spent about 100 hours analyzing it, only to find out that it was an idiotic idea. Frank Weltner's copyrights may not have been infringed. I may have to consider a different tort, like defamation of library or something like that. But I have the feeling we're going to get a lot of guidance in this law because it's talking our language when it says things like standard technical measures. Doesn't that just call to mind the idea of the standard technical software that Google uses to send out its queue of 1.8 million sites, all of whom respond to the word Jew, and in which JewWatch rightfully earned the first place and has been knocked down to about the 40th place? Doesn't that sound like a standard technical measure that scientific operation that Google goes through in order to throw up the results of your search request? If so, Google's not allowed to accommodate, and it may not interfere with standard technical measures, which it has definitely done by kicking JewWatch off of first place to accommodate a demand to that effect by the Jews. Google has interfered with standard technical measures. Now let's see if this relates to Frank Weltner or if I'm just climbing up a tree to take a nap. Here's another one of the standards that Google's not allowed to abridge. It may not be discriminatory. Let me read you the entire sentence. It must accommodate and not interfere with standard technical measures. Standard technical measures are defined as measures that copyright owners use to identify or protect copyrighted works that have been developed pursuant to a broad consensus of copyright owners and service providers in an open, fair, and voluntary multi-industry process, are available to anyone on reasonable, non-discriminatory terms, and do not impose substantial costs or burdens on service providers. So I think they're saying that Frank Weltner, as the holder of the copyright, is entitled to the standard technical measures that other copyright owners are entitled to, and that the service providers are entitled to, and these would be Frank Weltner's ISP, in an open, it does seem to support me, in an open, fair, and voluntary multi-industry process. Doesn't that sound like Google to you? An open, fair, and voluntary multi-industry process? Are available to anyone on reasonable, non-discriminatory terms, and do not impose substantial costs or burdens on service providers. So what it's saying here is that Frank Weltner cannot impose a substantial cost or burden on the service providers in order to let his website be accessed by their search engines. But that's not our issue, so we don't care. I am looking at this multi-industry process available to anyone on reasonable, non-discriminatory terms. And I don't know where it fits in or if it fits in, but it sure sounds good to me. Because this is the Digital Millennium Act. This is the Copyright Act that is anticipating protecting artists and writers for the next 1,000 years during what they have called the Digital Millennium. So clearly, anything we see in here is probably going to go in the favor of the artist, with protections, of course, against the artist complaining about unfair access of his art on the part of people like Google. This is the basic purpose of this act, by the way. It's to let the artist be protected without interfering with Google's right to access their information. And I may be entirely wrong. It may be that kicking somebody out of the queue is not considered part of their content and does not have anything to do with their rights as an artist, since in this case the art is not being accessed, it's being denied access. So I don't know if the right to the artist is equally allowed to have his art demonstrated as he is to not have it demonstrated, but I suspect that he does. I suspect that we will find that Frank Weltner's website, JewWatch, has not only the right not to be infringed by accessing it improperly, it, I think, probably also has the right to be accessed in a fair and reasonably non-discriminatory manner without modification, without interfering with the standard technical measures. Now, what happened here was that someone other than the website owner blocked his website. It's clear from reading this law that Frank has the right to block his own website. I am wondering if we can imply from that Frank, and only Frank, has the right to block his website, and that if Charles Schumer, a senator, used his influence as a politician to block Frank Weltner's website, has he stolen from Frank his own right to block his own website? This concept comes from the following statement. Any material that was posted without the copyright owner's authorization must be removed or blocked promptly once the service provider has been notified that it has been removed, blocked, or ordered to be removed or blocked at the originating site. Now, this does not relate to Frank Weltner's situation, but I'll tell you what it does relate to and see if you agree with me that there is an implication that Frank Weltner is the only one who can block his own website. This says that if you've got material that's been stolen from somebody else and it's being posted on somebody else's site in a way that infringes with the original artist's right to copyright, Google has to stop allowing that site to be accessed because Party B is not allowed to steal Party A's art. So if Google is notified that Party B has stolen Party A's art, then he has to block Party B's website as soon as Party A tells him that there's a copyright violation. So now from this I get the idea that the man whose copyright is being infringed is allowed to block access to the stolen art. And that suggests to me that the owner of the art does have the right to block access to his own art. Doesn't it seem to you then that since this is a right that belongs to the owner of the art, that no one but the owner of the art may exercise this right to block his material? Now here's something that sort of triggers an idea in my head. See if it interests you. The provider must not interfere with technology that returns hit information to the person who posted the material where such technology meets certain requirements. Let me repeat that so that I make sure you understand it. The provider, that means in this case Google, must not interfere with the technology that returns hit information to the person who posted the material. So Google nor his ISP provider is allowed to tweak the system so that when Frank goes to see how many hits he got, he gets an incorrect reading. The hits are very, very important then to the artist, aren't they? And where it doesn't come right out and say, because it's not discussing the concept I'm looking for, unfortunately I haven't found an exact discussion of my problem or Frank Weltner's problem. I'm not acting for Frank Weltner, by the way. I'm acting for myself and you and Frank and everyone who's being censored by these malicious Jews, because if we don't fight this sooner or later, they're going to get more and more rabid against our right to free speech until we find ourselves in the position that our genetic cousins in Germany are presently in, where they are not allowed to question the Holocaust or they will go to jail for 5 years. Case in point is Ernst Zundel, who merely wrote a perfectly legal pamphlet in the United States called Did 6 Million Die? The Truth at Last, for which he is being held in isolation, in jail, in Canada, with no charges filed against him, simply because he is deemed to be a threat to Canada's national security because he spoke and published words that questioned the obvious lies of the Holocaust. So you see, we are in danger, ladies and gentlemen, and we do have to fight this with whatever we have. I'm coming to you with some pieces of law that may or may not relate, because I feel it's essential whether we do it right or whether we do it wrong. We simply have to learn, and that means we've got to start talking legal concepts and defending our legal rights. So here is an interesting phrase. Quote, the provider must not interfere with technology that returns hit information to the person who posted the material where such technology meets certain requirements. So this is, I think they're talking about when you go into Alexa or something and you check out how many hits you got or something like that, and Alexa's not allowed to lie to you, but neither is anybody else. Clearly, you're allowed to know how many hits you're getting, according to this law. It's part of an artist's right. Well, can't we then surmise that anything that deprives an artist from his rightful number of hits is also some kind of a deprivation of his rights as an artist, his artistic rights? Thank you for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen, to this evening's edition of The Hola Hoax. See you next week, same time, same station.